Welcome to The Rework with Allison Tyler Jones, a podcast dedicated to inspiring portrait photographers to uniquely brand, profitably price, and confidently sell their best work. Allison has been doing just that for the last 15 years, and she's proven that it's possible to create unforgettable art and run a portrait business that supports your family and your dreams. All it takes is a little rework. Episodes will include interviews with experts from in and outside of the photo industry, mini workshops, and behind-the-scenes secrets that Allison uses in her portrait studio every single day. She will challenge your thinking and inspire your confidence to create a profitable, sustainable portrait business you love through continually refining and reworking your business. Let's do the rework.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to The Rework. What does pest control have to do with portrait photography? Well, more than you might think. My guest today is Cameron Bodden, a serial entrepreneur who started with one pest control truck and a big vision and has since built, scaled, and sold multiple service businesses, including Green Mango Pest Control, Coconut Cleaning, and Agave Autoglass. He's also the co-host of the Premium Mindset podcast and also a very recent ATJ client. You know that I love to look at other industries for inspiration for our own. And in today's conversation, we are going to pull out those lessons that matter to you as a portrait photographer. How to build your business without burning out. What it takes to build a premium brand. How to lead a team, even if that team is just one assistant or a bookkeeper. How to figure out whether you can afford to hire somebody. There's actually a formula that Cameron shares with us. And the biggest mistakes that he sees service providers make in their businesses. So though you might think the pest control has nothing to do with portrait photography, I know that you're going to get a ton of inspiration and actionable takeaways from our conversation today with Cameron Bodden. Let's do it. Okay, well, I am so excited to have a new guest on the Rework podcast today. This is Mr. Cameron Bodden, and many of our listeners are not going to know who he is, right? But he is a wunderkind of epic proportions, entrepreneur, has built and sold several service businesses, and he's also a brand new ATJ photo client. And so we got to chatting when we did his family session, and Cameron's here to share his wisdom about entrepreneurship, service businesses with our Rework listeners. So welcome, Cameron. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be on your show.
Thank you. Okay, so tell our listeners, give us a little bio about like what you started as a kid, as a three-year-old, as an entrepreneur, whatever. Like, give us the rundown on where you started and what you've done.
Yeah, so I was actually born in Price, Utah, but we moved here when I was 2 years old. And so I wish I could claim born and raised in Arizona, but I can't. But I love Arizona. I've lived here forever. I will live here forever. It just feels like home. When I go out of town and come back, it's like there's something about the streets, there's something about how clean it is, and just that feel that I love. And so my parents got divorced at a really young age, and that was, you know, I share that because it was really difficult for me, but I feel like it really molded into who I wanted to become and what I wanted to be. I'm a very visual learner. I have three older sisters, one older brother, and I always joke with them. I always thank them because they made all the mistakes. And, you know, I wasn't this perfect little boy, but it was like, man, my sisters are going out and, you know, they're doing things that my parents didn't love, and they would get things taken away, like the car, or they would get privileges taken away. And yeah. So I was like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that.
You could observe and learn from their mistakes. Yeah.
And what I found, and the reason I share that is because when I started my business, I've never worked for anyone else in my entire life. And it's like, that's cool. But also I feel like I missed out because I'm a visual learner, I missed the opportunity to copy what other people did. But why mentorship is so important to me is because I had a lot of great people in my life that I was able to, just like my brothers and sisters, duplicate. Like, hey, I like this, I'm going to do that. I don't like this, I'm not going to do that. And so I was like most kids, I guess. I feel like my whole life was planned for me, especially in the LDS community. It's like you go to school, you play sports, you get your arrow of light, you get your Eagle Scout. Like,
yep.
My dad did real estate. And so I wanted to be a real estate agent. That was the goal. And because my dad did it by air, he would show people large parcels of land in the helicopter.
Okay.
And I saw him making money and it was like, wow, like he's making good money. He's doing real estate and he's flying helicopters. Like, I want to do that. And so in high school, I went and got all my aviation licenses. I have my single engine, my multi-engine, my instrument and helicopter. And then when I got back from my mission for my church for 2 years, I served in Canada, Edmonton. I got home in 2009, which in 2009, if you had no money, was the worst time to get into real estate. And so my dad just kind of looked at me and was like, hey, I don't really have anything for you. Like, good luck. And a lot of returned missionaries get recruited to do door-to-door sales, and I was no different. And so my buddy, I'll never forget it, Dusty Williams, who became my business partner later on, said, hey, come, you know, watch how I recruit kids. You go recruit people in the off season in the winter, and you try and get them to sign up to come out and knock doors in the summertime. And what a lot of college students do is they try to make enough money between like May and August before the next school year starts so that they don't have to work during the school year so they can focus on their studies. After a couple of months of working with Dusty, kind of like recruiting, I wasn't getting paid anything, but I was just kind of observing. I was like, man, I feel like we can do it better. And so we started Green Mango in 2010. And that's pest control. Okay. Before that, I did car washes just because I was like, man, I got to make money. I got to do something, right?
Yeah, just hustle.
But I figured that I don't want to wash cars in the Arizona summer for too long. And what's funny is I sold that business for like 10 grand, bought Liz her wedding ring, and then started Green Mango the next month after that.
It
was just this crazy journey where we started with one truck and we just recently exited one of the largest pest control companies in Arizona. And just, I pinch myself every day because it's like, it was just such a blessing to go on that journey of 14 years. And in the middle, we started 5 other service companies, which we can get into, but it was just like, it was just this crazy roller coaster this past, you know, 14, 15 years of my entrepreneur journey.
I love that. Well, obviously you're a smart kid because, you know, those of us who are parents and have kids your age know that not all children look at their siblings and learn from them. So congratulations on that from a mom, I would say, good job, youngest child.
And you know, my mom.
I do. I know and love your mom very much and your older sister. So some of the things that I wanted to talk about today, because this podcast is geared specifically to, it's a very niche, to portrait photographers.
Okay.
So we are in the service industry, but we also are a little bit manufacturing and we're also a little bit retail. So we're kind of like a hybrid, right? And obviously it's service, but it's also like very creative. So you've scaled multiple service business. In your opinion, what is like non-negotiable for growth, but that is not going to burn out the owner? Because that's one of the things I see a lot is that solopreneur, they get in, they're so busy making the donuts that they can't offload anything and they just are doing everything and they're just burnt to a crisp. Like, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, for sure. I call them sacred rhythms. And so when you start a business, what's cool and what differentiates people from having that are actually successful and the ones that aren't are the ones that stick to their sacred rhythms. And so when I first started, it was like, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z that's different than everyone else, right? You go into it very ambitious saying this is what we're going to do. And most people will do that for like a year, year and a half. And then they realize, wow, there's a reason why most companies aren't putting down 20 gallons of product on the home. Because that was one of our things. Hey, we're going to put down more product than anyone else. We're going to be the first company that guarantees scorpion control. Well, about a year, year and a half in, 2 years in, we were looking around and we're like, man, like we're not making any money. Like, what's the problem? Oh, like we're putting down 4 times the product than anyone else. And that was a really pivotal point for us because we could have said, hey, we're going to go and be like everyone else, which was buy a backpack sprayer and put down like 3 to 5 gallons on the home. Or like continue to do what we did and figure it out, whether that's increasing our pricing, whether that's through better efficiency with routing, you know, you name it. we stuck to our guns and said, hey, we're going to be Arizona's premium service. We're going to, you know, guarantee scorpion control. At the time when we said that, like, no one else was doing that. There's a few companies that have jumped on board now, but it was very unique for us, right? We're going to have flat black trucks. We're going to put 22-inch rims on the truck. Like, we're going to actually put money into our service vehicles. We're going to outfit our technicians in Nike Dry Fit. We're going to make sure that we have a grooming and a dress standard. Because at the time, the industry was like the nasty Burns guy showing up in a Chester van, leaving an oil stain on your driveway. Like, literally, that's what we were right up against. And so it's so funny to see now. It's humor. Like, people would make fun of us. Like, what are you doing putting 22-inch custom rims on your service vehicles? Like, why? And you're going to go spend $5,000 on a paint job? Like, you just need to put a little logo on it. Now, when you look around, especially in Arizona, like, everyone's going flat. Everyone's going flashy tires, you know? And so
yeah.
I feel like we've created a huge movement, but we stuck to our sacred rhythms. And because of that, that's what differentiated ourselves. And that's why our referrals, and I share this stat on almost every single podcast, no matter how much money we spent on radio, billboard, Google, we're talking about $250,000, $300,000 contracts, our referrals would outperform those other categories almost 2-to-1.
So okay, so can you say that sentence one more time? Because I need everybody to pause your treadmill and listen to what he just said. Say it again.
So no matter how much money we spent on Google or radio, which radio was one of our highest performing for a very long time, it was a $300,000 radio contract. If we brought in 10 new accounts on the radio, we'd do 20 new accounts through customer referrals. And that's simply because we truly were different and we stuck to our guns. And so when you talk about the burnout, people get a year and a half in, two years in, and they're like, we're gonna start cutting corners. We're gonna start being like everyone else. And then you become like everyone else. And that's why people, like most companies, just kind of stay flatlined and don't really have that bell curve that we all want as entrepreneurs and business owners, is because they fall into how everyone does things. The people that actually stick to their guns, because when people start a business, they have great ideas. Most people that come into business aren't saying, I'm going to be like everyone else and be successful. Like, they have an idea of how they're going to be different, do different,
right,
better customer service. But what I find with business owners is what I'm saying is, like, they all fall back into, oh, I'm going to go to 5 gallons, or, oh, I'm going to, you know, do what I'm going to do the $50 photo shoot, or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. And that's the problem, why people get burnt out.
So I have questions. Okay. So obviously you wanted, there's form and then there's substance, right? So you wanted both. You wanted substance. So you're putting down more product than anybody else. For those of our listeners that aren't in Arizona, which is most of our listeners are not in Arizona, the scorpion thing is a really big deal. And it's actually incredibly hard to do pest control with scorpion. Very, very hard. So most people won't guarantee it, right?
Right.
So you're setting a really high bar for your business, mm-hmm, which requires a lot more chemical, whatever. And then you also have this form, which is like, you want to have the branding, you want to have the cool trucks. So to me, what that's doing is, like, if I'm hiring Green Mango to do a pest control, I've got a cool truck out in front of my house. So people know that, like, I've got the cool pest control guys, which is, you know, may or may not be worth something to somebody, but for those that it is worth something, they're willing to pay for it. Right.
Yeah, no, we played heavily into understanding what I consider the super consumer. So who is your target audience? Well, for us, the guys weren't calling in. It was the moms. It was the moms between 25 and 40 years old. And so, like, what do they want? We created this keeping up with the Joneses mentality of that, hey, would you want this nasty? And I keep saying Burns because that was our biggest competition at the time. But name whoever with the crappy service truck coming, or do you want like a custom flat black truck showing up and taking care of your pest control? And then with social, and we can talk about influencer marketing, all that, which was huge, is like, now it's like doing, it's honestly what you've created in your business and why I was, it's almost like a flex saying, oh, I went and did pictures with Allison Tyler Jones because you've created that. That's what we did with pest control, is that, hey, if as dumb as it sounds, it's like, I have the best pest control company. Like, we use Green Mango. There's a lot of pride around that because of all the little things that we did with the service, with the technicians, with the, you know, uniforms, with our marketing online, and then our influence presence. Like, it created this whole, like ecosystem of like, wow, like this is what cool people do.
Yeah. Well, and I think as a mom, it's true. You don't, especially if you're home and you, like you're in a house with some guy, like that's a vulnerable position to be in. The fact that they might have showered within the last 24 hours is a positive thing.
That's a positive.
That could be a plus, right?
Right.
So what are some of the other things that you did that you that differentiated you? So you put down more product. You had these great trucks. Everybody was dressed nice, professional. Anything else that you added to the service?
Yeah, so we're huge on customer expectations. And so what we would do is we had initial texts that we required them to sit down with the customer, and it lasted between 10 and 15 minutes where they'd go through what we considered our welcome packet. So within the welcome packet, we would re-go over our scope of service that explained everything that we did, because in pest control, there's over 10,000 competitors just in Arizona. And again, during the summertime, these huge door knocking companies come in, they knock on your door and they try and switch over our accounts. Well, if they go to the door and say, hey, Green Mango sucks, they don't power spray, they don't do the fence line, they don't do this, switch over, we do this, like we get a lot of customers taken, right?
Right.
If we educate our customers and say, hey, we're Arizona's finest premium service, we do the fence line, the yard, the perimeter of the house, we do more product and we educate them on what we do. When that door knocker comes to the door and says, hey, they don't do this, they can literally fight and advocate for us. I laugh because I have so many companies that come here and say, if we knock on a Green Mango customer's door, we just turn around. They are impossible to switch over. And a lot of that, it's not one thing that does it, but it's all the little things. Again,
right.
We set out at the beginning saying, hey, this is how we're going to be different. We're going to spend $20 on the welcome packet and print them for every single person, right? And so the welcome packet went over the service. It went over their contract because we didn't want people frustrated with us, right? Manage their expectations. I love what you do in your consultation. Hey, this is how much you are going to, like, this is the ballpark of what it's going to be. Are you good moving forward? If not, like, let's save both of our time, right?
Sure.
So yeah. We go over the contract. We go over the service. And then what was really cool is we'd have our referral card and we would pay girls. We had three girls when I sold. Their whole job was with a Sharpie right on the referral card, the customer's name. We didn't have it printed. We didn't have sticky notes. It's like literally handwritten referral card. And we would encourage our customers to say, look, every person that you refer, and we would explain our referral program to them. So, and then answer any questions. And so that was a huge part of what we did. And then of course, like we did the little things like texting the customer before we arrived. We would do a lot of training with our customer service representatives, like, you know, how do you greet them? How do you carry on a conversation while you're looking up data in the system, whether they're asking about their bill or their next service? How do you close? You know, what experience are you giving them? We were like really heavy on that.
Okay, so just layers, basically just layer upon layer, which is a lot of money, right? So when you hit that point where you realize like, shoot, we're doing all this stuff, we're now making no money. Instead of saying, we're going to go and do what everybody else is doing, we're doubling down on matte black and 22 inch rims. Like, but at some point there had to be a price increase. Fair.
Yeah, for sure.
So what did that look like? How did you do that without losing all your clients or freaking out?
So we actually didn't do the price increase until 9 years in. And I didn't make money at Green Mango until 6 years in. And so what's funny about that is as soon as I started to delegate year five and start to give people bonuses for owning their department is when I actually started making money. So with us doing all these little things that were considered like premium, right? That wasn't the problem. The problem was like we were running inefficiently in so many other areas. One of the ways that you get in trouble in service companies is like your route density. So how many stops are you putting on a route and then your pay? So when I hired like a branch manager and a tech manager and field managers and had them own that, like people were able to see issues in their own departments and were able to fix it. Now with inflation and everything else, 9 years in, it was coming to a point where it's like, man, we're still only charging $65 to a lot of these OG customers when the rates are now $85, right?
Right.
I remember going to my buddy who actually owns another huge pest control company His name's Mike. He's an amazing guy. And I just like, dude, I'm so nervous. I don't remember the exact amount of customers, but it was like 7 or 8,000 customers that were like on the OG pricing, right? Luckily, we increased our prices every single year. Like, we were smart enough to keep up with that. But again, with pest control, what's cool is you sign people up on a year contract and they don't cancel. They just keep going. And so we'd have customers 5, 6, 7 years with us because we were doing a great job, but they were at their old pricing and we were just like, we literally probably weren't even making money on them. So I go to my buddy and I'm like, hey man, like, how do I do this? And he just walked me through it. I've actually created a playbook on price increases that we can share with your listeners if you want. But what's cool is like, when we sent out the letter, we lost $174,000. But what's great is I made $950,000 because of the price increase. Less than 1% of customers canceled. And I was just like, whoa. Like, one, people don't care about the little price increase. Like, they expect it, right?
Yeah, if they're going to pay $65, they'll pay $85.
Yeah, especially over a year period. Like, we're talking about a couple more bucks a month. Like, it's not like I was.
It's nothing.
But that's the thing. Like, you stress about it, but it's really not a huge issue. And so if it's done right, and that's why I created a playbook around it to like showcase, hey, when's the right time? How do you go about it? What's the letter state? How do you word the pricing? Because my buddy walked me through it. So after that, we increased our prices every single year. And I don't think we ever got over 3% cancellation rate. And it was just a testament to who we were as a service company and, you know, the value that we brought to customers where they just wouldn't flinch.
I love that. That's good. Now, I think there's just some direct comparisons to our industry. Obviously, we're not working. I mean, most of us are not working at that kind of volume. We're not having that many clients. You know, we're in a very high touch, low volume kind of thing. But I love the idea of like that efficiency, you know, getting those efficiencies down. So how are you balancing like efficiency, but also keeping that personal touch where it needed to be? Did you feel like that was a tension that you had to deal with?
Yeah. So I lived by the rule of seven. And so with every seven employees that I had, I created a manager over that person. And then there was a manager over those people. So at the end we had, over 105 or 110 techs. And so for every seven people, there was a direct field manager over those people. And they had all the KPIs. Hey, this is how you train them. Like, we had a welcome script for when they knock on the front door. Like, most companies just knock on the door. Hey, I'm here to do your service. It's like, no, like, yeah. We were very specific on what to say, refer to the notes, all the little things. And it was the field manager's job to make sure that we were keeping that same quality as if Cameron was coming to spray your house. And that's the challenge that I see entrepreneurs as they scale, is they lose that little touch because they don't train their people on, like, they don't take the time to train their people, period. And so I always tell people, like, hey, if you were gonna hire your little boy or your little girl, what would the training process look like? And the reason why I say family is because they're gonna care about your kid a lot more than they care about a stranger coming in. Like, they're gonna give them the podcast to listen to. They're gonna encourage them to take the coworker out to dinner. They're gonna have them, you know, read through whatever book you have. Like, even to a point, I was sitting down with my partner, Evan, at my carpet cleaning business the other day. And I asked him the same question. I said, and we were talking about the sales meeting. And I asked him, I said, where did the achievers sit? Like, have you seen any correlation, the people that have a 450 job average versus the people that have a $200 job average? And he sat there and he thought for a second. He said, you know, what's crazy is like all the high achievers sit in the front right.
Yeah.
And all the low achievers sit in the back. And so I said, okay, if your son started, would you have him sit in the front or would you just tell him to sit wherever you want? And he's like, I would for sure have him sit in the front. I said, why aren't we doing that? At least require that for the first 6 months of all new employees. And so you start to pick up on patterns of things that you did, because like, we're not that special. We're just driven and a little, we have a couple, you know, bolts loose as entrepreneurs, right? Yeah. Business owners, like, something's wrong with us.
We don't want to work for other people.
But it's like, we're not the best. We're not the best at each category, right?
Right.
And so if you can bring someone in and teach them how you did or how you learned to be whoever you are, the best salesman, the best technician, the best photographer, like whatever it is that got you there, like, take the 20 hours, the 50 hours to write the training process, put them through that, and now you just bought back your time. And that's what I like at the end. I got really, really great at that, is buying back my time. We were just talking about, you know, my driver. It's like, I only drive 9 hours a week right now, but I hired a personal driver to drive me for those 9 hours, because even as I'm like, quote unquote, retired, like I'm still trying to buy back my time, because I want to leverage those 9 hours that I'm driving every single week. And yeah. So as you do that as business owners, and then you talk about like the incentive pay and not just like capping people. If you just cap people at like an hourly or a salary wage and not give them any bonuses, like why should they show up? Why should they do a little bit extra? People don't just come to work anymore, and it sucks. And you can sit there and fight it if you want, but it's like people want an additional care or bonus in order to go above and beyond.
Yeah, agreed. One of the things I love what you're saying is for our listeners that might be solopreneurs, or maybe they have one or two employees, or maybe they're thinking about hiring their first employees. And even if you don't, even if you stay a solopreneur, it's just codifying the things that work. Like once something has worked really well, like let's keep doing that. I think as creatives, you know, as entrepreneurs, we get bored easily. And so we want to like just change things all the time. And so there's some things that you should change, but a lot of times we're just changing things just to change things when, hey, if it works, if you got a good response from that sales technique or that wording, you know, the script or whatever, like let's codify that, put it in a Google Doc. And then when you have a new employee, you can just run them through that.
So I've worked with a lot of creators like you, and they're very mm-hmm. difficult. Yeah. Like I understand them. And so like the people that are listening to this, like you need to go find your person that's organized. And they're worth whatever, like, and so you said like a solopreneur, if you're the guy that's listening or girl that's listening right now, and you don't have any employees and you just feel like you're drowning, you probably need someone like me who is very organized and can kind of see the bigger vision. That's Dusty, my business partner, was the creative. So okay. creative. I'm not that person. I'm really not. But the reason why we complemented each other so well is because I'm a systems and processes guy. And so he'd have these great ideas. And then be like, hey, D, like we need to hire this person to do that. Or we need to free up your time so you're not stuck doing this. And so what's really cool is even when you're a solopreneur, you're doing something that you hate doing. Like truthfully, you didn't start the business thinking that I'm going to do payroll or I'm going to do.
Yeah, I want to be in QuickBooks.
I'm going to do the appointment scheduling or I'm like whatever it is in your guys' world that you hate. I've created a little formula around it. And so you basically take your salary, right? You divide it by 50 because that's most weeks that people work with holidays and all that. You divide that by 40, which is the 40-hour working days. So let's just say you make, you know, $100,000 a year and, you know, you're saying, okay, there's this task that I do that is, I don't know, like let's take appointment scheduling or what's something
that's
that you
a good
guys
one.
Do?
That's a good there's one. A point, scheduling like, clients. Yep.
So you're worth like $50 an hour, right? If you spend, like, what does it take to go hire a appointment scheduler? Is that $2,000 a month? Is that $3,000 a month? Like, what do you think that is?
I would say probably for most people in our business, maybe like 20, 25 an hour, you know, something like that, you know?
Yeah. So if you're spending more than 15 hours a week on that task, you can afford to go hire that appointment setter, right? And buy back 15 hours of your time. And so my thing is that a very safe formula is if it's the 50% rule, if you're spending 50%, so if the salary is $3,000 and you're spending $1,500 of your time on that, then you need to go hire that person. And that's what I've always lived by, because there's this, as business owners, we have to wear the hat, right? Like you got to wear the hat. And then it's like, okay, there's enough money coming in. When do I hand it off? You right. hand it off when you're allocating 50% of your salary to that position, because once you buy back that 15 hours or 10 hours, whatever it might be, you are talented enough to go 2-3x that in revenue for your business. Now, if you go sit on the couch and you hang out and you don't do anything, yeah. like you just wasted money. But that's why I hired the driver. Like I'm basically like retired now. It sounds so funny, but like I don't need a driver. I really don't, right? But when I look at what is my time allocation, how much am I making a year? And I divide it by 50, I divide it by 40 hours. And I look at how much time, even if I bought back 3 hours of the 9 hours, like it's almost worth three times the price that I'm paying my driver. So it's like all I got to do is be effective for three of those 9 hours and I'm winning. and I have the luxury of everything else. And so that's the mistake that a lot of people make as entrepreneurs that are just starting out is I know this because it was me. I was literally a technician for 6 years on the truck. I was such an idiot. I sprayed houses for 6 years.
Really?
I wish someone would have taught me this formula and I could have handed it off because it's like I wasted so much time.
But people are so scared to do it and they'll hire somebody and it's not a fit. And so then they just retreat back into it. And then it like reinforces the idea that nobody else can do what I do. And it's like,
that's the playbook. That's why I was asking you the questions yesterday, because your staff is absolutely phenomenal. And I don't think they just became that. I think it's because you were very intentional with how you trained them. Right.
Yeah.
That's the problem. People hire people and they spend an hour training them. I started this consulting business and I've had to like get out all the things out of my head. And so I've created all these playbooks around like how to create a customer success roadmap, how to create an employee roadmap. And so I have all these things, which I'll just give them to free for your listeners. But these are all the little things that if you take the time and you're intentional with how to onboard that person with a success roadmap, I refer to it from my Ironman. So when I trained for an Ironman like 4 or 5 years ago, I was looking around again. I was looking at my brother. No offense to my brother and my dad. I love them. But like they started to have the dad bod, like a little stomach. And like I was starting to have that. I'm like, I don't want that. That's not what I want. So I went to my trainer and said, hey, I want to do an Ironman because I feel like if I do an Ironman, like I'll get skinny. Yeah. He said, okay, Cameron, the Ironman is in 9 months. What do you want? And I said, what do you mean what I want? Well, do you just want to finish or do you want to finish in a certain amount of time? Like, what's your goals? And I said, well, I want to run at a 7:05 pace. I want to bike it. I can't remember that pace. I'm like, and I just want to finish the swim. Like, I'm not a swimmer. I'm not a swimmer, you know? And so
I want to not drown.
Yeah. So what's crazy is I trained for 9 months and every single day he broke down exactly how much miles I needed to run at the pace I needed to run, the workout that I needed to do in the gym, the bike rides I needed to do, the swimming, how often I needed to get a massage, like literally everything he laid out for me. And then every Saturday we did a mock triathlon where we go through like a mini three, we do the swimming, biking, and the running, right? And then on race day, I never forget, I called him, I said, his name's Terrence. Terrence, you'll never believe what happened. Like, not only did I hit my goals, but I exceeded them. And he's like, I know. Like, I gave you a bulletproof plan and you stuck to it. Like, of course you smashed it. Yeah. And I think about that a lot because it's like, how often do people go into a business and the owner or the manager sits with them for 3 days and then says, good luck. And that's the problem. You need to break down, how do you become Allison Tyler Jones? How do you become Cameron Bodden? There's a way. Like, they might not like it, but there's a way. So if you create that for them and then you have mock trials, like here's where you should be after month one, here's where you should be after month three, month six, month nine. Like that's when you start to have success with employees and when you can delegate it. And then it's like, you don't have to stress about it.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a lot more than I've done.
You're like, too much. You're like TMI.
No, it's good. It's awesome. And I think that's more than, you know, when you and I were talking about this yesterday, I said, I hire for personality because you can't train that and for motivation, but it's true. Like you do have to live it, breathe it. Like it's an ethos, right? It's like, this is how we do it. There is a way that it is done and everything for us, I call it the brand filter. Like we have a brand and everything we do goes through that filter. So if we're talking, like if we return a text and it sounds like this before we send it, is that sound like us? Like, is it slightly funny, kind of snarky, but with love, you know, really, like it's wrapped in that love is at the heart of it, you know? So is it that, you know? And so I think, but you're right. So often we hire, especially your first hire, you think, okay, I'm just going to hire somebody that's exactly like me. And that's not who you need. You already have one of you. You need somebody who's not like you. Like I need a you. Stacy's like you. She's very systems. And my husband's like you. He's very systems oriented, very process oriented. And I'm like the more the visionary. I'm more like, okay, here are the ideas. But I think it's easy when you are the creative to discount that. You think, oh, that's boring. But you have to have that. You have to have somebody like that.
Yeah, I don't know how else to like stress that. Like if people get one thing out of this podcast, it's just know thyself, right? Like be honest with where you're weak. As human beings, like, we're so amazing. Like, when our back's up against the wall, we do some amazing things. And so if you're scared to hire that person, go through what we're talking about, go through that customer success plan, make sure they have all the tools, bring them on, and then go pay for them three times over and just watch how, like, easy your life becomes and how, well, what a blessing Stacy and Chelsea are to you. Like, I can just see it, you know, like,
for
they
sure.
they make you. And yeah. Again, I'm sure you could be successful doing it by yourself, but, like, how crazy would your life be and how different would that experience be? And just it. And so at some point you did it and, like, you figured it out, and that's what's cool.
Yeah. And it does. It is amazing how it does. It's almost like a magical. I loved your formula because it is almost like a magical thing. Like, once you have that freed up, like, you're not doing whatever it is, like, say that it's scheduling the constant back and forth with the clients or whatever, then it's like, oh, you know what? We could do a marketing thing. We could do this email. Like, it just frees your mind up to be like, you're not bogged down in QuickBooks, doing yeah. your bookkeeping or doing your sales tax or whatever. Like, you should not be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I love that. And thank you for sharing. We'll link in the show notes to the resources that you were talking about.
Yeah.
But I love all of this. So the last thing I wanted to ask you was just, like, now that you've done, is it three businesses that you've started and sold, or
it's
probably
actually,
more than that?
It's been six.
Six. Okay. Yeah. So the car wash.
Well, I don't count
pest
that
control.
One. Yeah.
Okay.
So we had Green Mango, which was pest control.
Okay.
We had Black Hat Security, which was, like, your home automation and security.
Okay.
Pineapple Pools, which was service. Agave was windshields. Coconut was carpet cleaning. And then actually I did solar for a while, Phoenix, for a couple of years there, Phoenix Power.
Okay. So you did lots of different
things. I just love pain, man. It wasn't the smart, like, I look back, yeah. like, that was the dumbest financial decision ever, but the best decision I made because I learned so much during that process.
Well, and you've learned, like, literally processes and systems, I mean, which is
yeah.
amazing. So as we head out into the sunset together on this, what advice would you have for our listeners? So portrait photographers, I think most of the people that listen to this podcast, they want to be premium. They want to yeah. be lux. They want to serve at the highest level. But what do you feel like, as you've watched all these businesses, are kind of like the biggest mistakes, or maybe a big one, and that you feel like they could do to make their business better? I know that's a really broad question.
I think what's cool is, like, it's not hard to stand out as a business. Like, it really isn't. Everyone is doing the same thing. Everyone has crappy service. Everyone, you know, is just, again, doing the same thing. There's some stat out there that if you can do 50 push-ups as a male, you're in the top 1% tile. Like, how embarrassing is that? Like, yeah. most guys should be able to do 50 push-ups. You know what I mean?
Yeah. yeah.
So again, if you're the business owner and you're listening to this and you've been in business for 3 years or 4 years or 2 years, go back to your journal, or, you know, go back into the memory bank of, hey, when I first started this, what did I say I was going to do that was going to be different? And figure out a way to keep doing that, because that's what's going to make you special. And that's what's going to make you stand out. When I think about Allison Tyler Jones, it's the little things, it's the personality from your team when you show up. It's the, you know, probably took you guys 5 minutes to print our name on the parking spot. To me, like, that's it. And that's so, you know, there's so many more things, but it's like, when I think yeah. about you, it's like, man, like, she just did it right. So how hard is that? Like, go find a great receptionist and a great, whatever title Chelsea has. It's like, what's her title again?
Client coordinator.
Like, go find yeah. a great client coordinator. And, like, create an amazing experience. People appreciate that. Like, when a kid looks at you in the eyes and shakes your hand and says, like, nice to meet you, like, my name's Banks, that's different. Most kids don't shake your hands. They're avoiding eye contact. And yeah. so, like, you're telling me the only thing that my kid needs to do in order to stand out to you as a human being is look at you in the eyes and shake your hand? Like, business is no different. And so I teach my kids to do that because it's like, hey, like, this is what's going to make you stand out. And so, again,
so
I love what you're doing. I love who you are. You're practicing what you're preaching. And so, like, take the risk, though. I'm a huge ready, fire, aim guy. Like, you don't have to know all the things, right? Like, just go do it. Put your back up against the wall, and, like, some great things will happen.
It's so true. We get in our heads so much and think about I think as creatives, probably you, this is true for, like you were saying, that people like us are your worst clients, is because we're very creative and thinking of all the ways it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, but like that ready, fire, aim, so true. I think it's so true. I love that. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today and love the nuggets. I think there's so many good things that you brought out that we can take and use in our businesses. So thank you for being here. I appreciate you.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm so glad we got to finally meet. I've heard about you for the past few years, but I was like, man, she's going to create an experience. And so we finally got to come do it. And it was absolutely phenomenal. So
it's going to be awesome.
Do you do tours? Like, do you do like a tour? That sounds funny, but like,
what do you mean?
You should open. I don't know how open. Obviously, you have a podcast and you're sharing all your tricks, but some of my favorite things, my buddy Tommy does a shop tour and he allows people to like come in and just kind of be a fly on the wall and he shows them everything. And so it's like, I don't know. I think it'd be cool for people to be able to like experience other photographers, experience what you do from like start to finish. I think people could get a lot of benefit from that if you're willing to share.
Yeah, no, we do. We have. I've got a Mindshift membership that we do like a couple of lives a month, and they get to see all of that. And so it's for sure, because I think the thing that's cool is I think it's so true to just watch somebody do it. Not that you're going to do it exactly how they do it, but that you're like, oh yeah, that's cool. I could do something like that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. I appreciate you. Hi, Rework friends. It's ATJ, just jumping on to wish you the happiest of holidays. I hope that you get a chance to rest up from all the crazy and spend great quality time with those you love the most. We are so thankful for your time and attention for this last season of the Rework podcast and look forward to seeing you in early 2026. To kick off the new year with a whole bunch of great guests and information to help you uniquely brand, profitably price, and confidently sell your very best work. Happy holidays.
You can find more great resources from Allison at dotherework.com and on Instagram at do.the.rework.